The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org.
Welcome. Now we'd like to share a few true stories, along with a funny tale or two. We'll start by going back several hundred years to meet one of Korea's greatest heroes, Admiral Yi Sun-shin, who resisted the Japanese during an invasion in the 16th century. This brilliant naval commander is respected still for his loyalty, his skill and courage, as well as for his invention of the turtle boat, one of the world's first armored ships. A man with many talents, he kept a daily diary which gives a glimpse of his life. Here are a few excerpts, beginning with a famous battle scene and moving briefly through several years of changing moods and challenges. 7/15/1592. First, I ordered out five of our ships to make chase, pretending a surprise attack. When the enemy boats under full sail pursued them, our ships fled from the bay as if returning to base. The enemy boats kept chasing ours until they came out to open sea. Immediately, I commanded my ship captains to line up in the crane wing formation, so as to surround the enemy boats in a semicircle. Then I roared, "Charge!" Our ships dashed forward, with flags waving to the sound of drums. Then the roar of cannons, named Earth, Black, and Victory, poured down fireballs like rain and hail, breaking two or three of the enemy ships. The other enemy boats, confused and stricken with terror, scattered and fled in all directions. Our men shouted victory, sending bullets and arrows so that enemy warriors dropped into the water like falling leaves. 11/21/1593. Alas, during the past 12 months at sea, many of our sailors have fallen sick of starvation, barely clinging to life, not to speak of the deaths of half their number. As the days are growing colder, no one can bear to see their ghost-like miseries, anticipating death every hour, much less expect them to draw bowstrings or to row boats. When I think of the serious situation, my heart bleeds as if cutting off my own flesh. 5/10/1594. Heavy rain and at night a mad wind. At dawn, I rose from bed and opened the window wide, when all at once I saw a forest of our ship's masts covering the sea far over the horizon. If the enemy attack, there is no doubt we can destroy them. 7/4/1594. Clear sky and much work. The local Navy commander came and took breakfast with me. Later, I invited to lunch two defense commanders, ordered execution of five Japanese robbers and one runaway Korean sailor, shot 10 rounds of arrows, sent a letter of appointment. 8/13/1594. Dispatched some young, well-drilled officers on raids to ambush the enemy. Passed the night at sea. The moonbeams glitter on the calm water. The wind is still and raises no waves. One is tempted to blow the flute until it is very late at night. 10/14/1594. In my dream before daybreak, the Japanese commander begged for surrender. offering me 5 6-chamber guns and his commanding sword. All the enemy agreed to accept the terms of surrender. 8/6/1597. Started traveling after breakfast. The roads were filled with refugees. Could not bear to see the endless procession of men and women, boys and girls, young and old, holding each other's hands, hungry, seeking shelter. 10/14/1597. Clear sky. In my dream, my horse stumbled and I fell into a stream, but my youngest son stooped to pick me up and hold me. I awoke with surprise. In the evening, a man delivered a letter from my country home. Before opening the envelope, my bones and flesh shuddered, and my head became dizzy. Inside were 2 words, with weeping. I at once understood the war death of Mion, my youngest son. A chill struck into my heart, and I mourned with a cry. Heaven, why art thou so merciless? My heart is going to burn and tear in pieces. Heaven and earth became dark. The sky has lost its light. My son, where have you gone, leaving me behind? I should die, and you should live. That is the natural order. Now you are dead, and I am alive. Why? I wish to follow you to the grave, to stay and weep together. But if I do, your brothers, sisters, and your mother will have no one to support them. Thus I endure, with a live body, but a dead soul. Nothing but tears. At this time, near the end of his life, Admiral Yi lost not only his son, but his beloved mother as well. And he was the victim of a scheme by jealous fellow commanders to dishonor him. Thus he also suffered arrest and disgrace. After he was freed, he continued to work for his country, and on the 19th day of the 11th moon in 1598, he led his men into battle for the last time. He was shot and gravely wounded, but ordered his death kept a secret during the battle. Thus his men fought on bravely, not knowing he was gone. And on that day, a great victory was won, a fitting tribute to a great man. Another wise man who lived several hundred years ago was a monk known as Muhakdesa. Here is a tiny tale of his wit. Long ago, at the beginning of the Joseon dynasty, there was a well-known monk in Korea named Muhakdesa. He was a wise monk, skilled in the art of geomancy, knowing the land and its spirits. But he was also well covered with flesh, and had a face which looked remarkably pig-like. So one day, the king, who was sitting near the wise monk, suddenly said to him, "Indeed, you are a pig." The monk immediately replied, "And you, sir, are a Buddha." The king was perplexed and said, "I called you a pig, which is not a kind comparison, but you called me a Buddha, which is a fine name to be called. Why did you say that?" Muhakdesa bowed and said, "Sir, to a Buddha, everything looks like a Buddha. To a pig, everything looks like a pig." Korean culture boasts of great heroes, painting, dances, and much more. But her history is also full of battles and invasions. During World War II, great numbers of Korean girls and women were forced to meet the sexual needs of Japanese soldiers who occupied Korea and fought in nearby lands. This poem is one of the recent writings, at last addressing that terrible time and the great pain of those comfort women. Suni's Thimble by Itsuko Ishikawa. Translated, Aiko Carter. Suni was born in a village in Korea. When she was 16 years old, she had to leave her family, for she was told that she must work in a military equipment factory in Japan for 3 years. Her mother gave her a needlework thimble with a rose of Sharon flower, the symbol of Korea, on it. But instead of being taken to manufacture military equipment, Suni was taken to China to serve as a comfort woman for Japanese military personnel. Suni was made to accept the Japanese name Tokiko, but she resisted Japanese soldiers and used her Korean language instead. Suni, at the tender age of 16 years, her eyes shining, spoke proudly, holding her thimble as she stared at the Japanese soldier. "As a rose of Sharon, you are the flower of our people. Even if killed, my people will revenge me someday." The soldier showed a little hesitation, but took his sword and cut off Suni's head. Her head cut off, it ascended high beyond the sky. The young girl named, against her wishes, Tokiko, the young girl driven into the comfort station near the river, the girl beheaded by a Japanese sword because she used her own language. What never should have come to pass was done by Japan's Imperial Army. Young girls exploited in comfort stations under established systems and rules. Like a pheasant, her head was cut off and her resentment rose into the air. With her head, it went high up, as high as the sky. On clear days, in cloudy skies, far away, her head seems still to float. Crying voices from far away still ask, "Why?" That loud crying voice, that innocent face of childhood. The thimble remained on Suni's middle finger, even when she had fallen to the sword. The pretty rose of Sharon thimble bloodied in her hand. 50 years have passed, but the thimble is still drenched with blood. Soon after the tragedies of World War II came the Korean War, a war that left a country sadly divided and thousands upon thousands of families torn apart. In a collection of true stories, Six Insides from the Korean War, 16-year-old Kim Chong-gi describes his family before June 25, 1950, as a peaceful family, more or less happy, just an average Korean family. But then came the war. He escaped from Seoul with his sick mother, and later his father and brother were killed in battle. After his mother's death, he lived by shining shoes until he was taken to an orphanage. In this very brief excerpt, he describes his mother's death and his thoughts years later. "I begged her to live, and in the thickening night I prayed for speedy break of day. Mother died in my arms that night. She died with nobody but me to mourn and weep over her. For some time, I did not know that death had come, never having seen a person die before. I pounded my chest and tore my hair. It had been a pitch-black night with no light, so I had not actually seen her die. I had only felt it later. I merely felt that something terrible had happened to her when she remained silent for such a long time, not replying to any of my questions. Years have gone by. I am not quite alone now, lonely though I am most of the time. But I know that my tragedy is not an exception, far from it. Many of my fellow countrymen have suffered the same heartbreaking losses. I am a strong, healthy young man now. This spring I will complete high school. Mother told me in a dream years ago that I should have to wait much longer until I was ready to join my family. With God's help, I will live a life that is honest and true and worthy, until that day when another grave appears on that sunny hillside beside my dear, beloved mother. Amidst the pain and hardships felt in Korea, a sense of humor and a strong spirit of Korean identity and pride have flourished, as you can see from this clever tale. A Silent Debate. Once a Chinese scholar, hearing of the great knowledge in Korea, decided to test the wits of the people there. After a long, weary trip, he was at last in a small boat heading toward the capital city. As he watched the boatman row, he suddenly had an idea. "It is always interesting to know how clever the working people are in a land," thought the scholar. "Let me test this boatman and see if he has a spark of intelligence." Since the scholar spoke little Korean, and the Korean boatman knew no Chinese, the scholar had to converse in a kind of sign language. Carefully, he placed his fingers in the shape of a circle, the symbol of the universe, to ask if the boatman knew the secrets of the heavens. Now this boatman spared not a thought about the universe, but instead spent all of his time thinking about his favorite food, dok, Korean rice cakes. So when he saw the circle sign, he thought the scholar was asking, "Do you like round rice cakes?" Well, there was no doubt about that. He loved all shapes and sizes of rice cakes, but he was especially fond of the square kind. So to answer, he shaped his fingers into a square, as if to say, "Although I like round rice cakes, I prefer the square variety." The scholar gasped in awe, for he saw the square and recognized the sign of the earth. So he imagined the reply was, "Yes, I know about the universe, and I understand as well about the earth and its secrets." Not believing what he'd seen, the scholar decided to try once more. He held up three fingers, as if to ask, "Do you know even three of the important relationships described by wise Confucius?" The boatman, still dreaming of his rice cakes, saw the three fingers and thought, "Ah, he's asking me if I eat three rice cakes at one time." Now, this was a silly question, for if you love rice cakes, it's impossible to stop with just three. So the boatman quickly held up five fingers, meaning, "Only three rice cakes? Never. I always eat five at one time." At this reply, the scholar almost fell into the water, for he thought the boatman had answered, "Of course, I fully understand not only three, but all five Confucian relationships." "Amazing," whispered the scholar. "This boatman knows so much. If a mere boatman has such learning, then the scholars will be impossible to debate with. They must be truly brilliant. What a land of rich learning." Then the Chinese scholar ordered the boat turned around, and he quickly returned to his own home. He told everyone there about the wondrous learning to be found in Korea, but never again did he venture back to that land of intellectual giants. While scholars and invaders came to Korea over the years, some people also left, especially during the 20th century time of Japanese occupation. But ties to their homeland remained strong for most who moved away, even as they had to learn new languages and customs. In her fascinating autobiography, Quiet Odyssey, Mary Pike Lee describes her experiences in California schools earlier in this century. "My first day at elementary school was a frightening experience. As we entered the schoolyard, several girls formed a ring around my brother and I, singing a song and dancing in a circle. When they stopped, each one came over to me and hit me in the neck, hurting and scaring me. They ran away when a tall woman came towards us. Her bright yellow hair and big blue eyes looking down at me were a fearful sight. It was my first close look at such a person. She was welcoming me to her school, but I was afraid. When she addressed me, I answered in Korean, "I don't understand you." I turned around, ran all the way home, and hid in our shack. Father laughed when he heard about my behavior. He told me there was nothing to be afraid of. Now that we were living here in America, he said, where everything is different from Korea, we would have to learn to get along with everyone. The next day, when we went back to school, the girls did not dance around us. I guess the teacher must have told them not to do it. I learned later that the song they sang was, "Ching Chong Chinaman, sitting on a wall. Along came a white man and chopped his head off." The last line was the signal for each girl to chop my head off by giving me a blow on the neck. That must have been the greeting they gave to all the Oriental kids who came to school the first day. My stay in high school was a constant battle of wits. My English teacher was an old lady with a sour face. It was a common practice to give the non-white students lower grades than the whites, but one day she was so unfair I protested. Her eyes were blazing with hatred as she said, "If you don't like it, get the hell out of here. We don't want you here anyway." My history teacher was something else. He was a young man in his 30s, a good looker and a smart aleck. When we came to the pages about China and Japan, he referred to them as the lands of stinking chinks and dirty Japs. Looking straight at me in a taunting manner, he said that Korea was a wild, savage country that had been civilized by the Japs. That was the last straw. I was furious. I waited until the bell rang and all the students had left. I walked up to him and said, "Where did you learn Asian history? You don't know a thing about the subject. If you ever say such things again, I'm going to stand up in class and in assembly to tell everybody in school where you go every Friday and Saturday night." His face turned white, red, and purple, and he fell back in his chair. He finally managed to say, "What are you talking about?" I replied, "My family lives in an old building across the road from the Chinese place where you always go every weekend to drink. I recognize the two girls with you, since one is from this class. I can ask them if you wish." His mouth fell open. He was speechless for a while, and then he asked, "What are you doing there?" I said, "My family and I are forced to live there because damned hypocrites like you think we are not fit to live in town. We are forced to live there, but what about you? You go there because you like it. That's the difference between us." After that, he just turned past the pages on Asia. The class never learned about the subject. Luckily, some things have changed, and you are learning much about Asia today. We hope you've enjoyed hearing more about Korea just now. We thank you for listening and hope that someday you'll go to Korea yourself and bring back more stories to share.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.